Well, with that, we'll start. It's episode 61 of the Slide In Podcast.
Special day.
I'm Brayden Anderson. That's Kelly Gallup. And it's Welcome back. Special day. We have Bucky McCormick here. Bucky, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Got my Bucky Lucky Puck.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
It's on the wall.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
But a who?
I'm excited.
So we've talked about Bucky a lot. We actually, Kelly and I were talking in the shop the other day. Your name is right up there for most mentioned with anybody we talk about on this show.
Yeah.
It's
cool.
It's
nice of you guys. It's always very kind. So.
They're still
so far.
Don't get to it. You should hear
what we say. You're
like family now. Yeah. Real shit comes up.
we've been wanting to have you on for a while. I got sick and we had to cancel that one day. So it's nice to actually have you in here in person.
Bucky is from Blue Ribbon Flies in West Yellowstone, but in case one of you missed 100 times we've said it.
Right. Yeah. On his hat, which actually when I called you asking if you wanted to be on, the first thing you said was like, I don't think I have a slide in hat. Is it okay if I wear a blue ribbon? I'm like, absolutely.
Well,
and I appreciate it. It's very, very kind of you to say that. So I first met you not knowing who you were or much about the West Yellowstone fly shops at all. I remember walking up there, and I've told this story before, but just wanted to go see another fly shop. And I remember you and I chatted for an hour plus, and 3 different times you went out to your truck and got me a fly that you had tied to give me. You said, wait, I got one more.
About the
right
third
back.
Time he told me that shit, a son bitch never gave me a fly.
Yeah. Hence the pocket fly.
So I got a cup.
Because you told me a piece of shit. And I was like, okay, I don't want to be that. So.
So I was always very appreciative.
In the most endearing of ways.
Yes. I was very appreciative of your kindness as a, fellow fly shop employee. And there's Kelly's name carries a certain amount of weight around these parts where, you go into a fly shop, I work for Kelly, and generally people treat you differently because of that in a good way, hopefully. But there was no, I feel like you did a great job of treating everybody the same, no matter who they were who walked to the shop, which is like what you're supposed to do.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't always happen. So I thought that was cool and just wanted to give you some props for that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
I've been hanging out in there since it opened. That shit.
Great shop. Yeah.
That's been there a long time. Yeah.
Since the 70s.
Yeah. 70, opened? 70, late 79.
Yeah.
Yeah. Late 79. Yeah. Yeah. It's
amazing.
So they're doing, you guys are doing online stuff, obviously the in-store.
Yeah, online in the winter.
So check them out. They're competitive of ours, but they're great folks, so support them as well.
We have fun with it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, let's jump into talking about some fishing stuff. Design flies. Kelly?
Let's get some history on Bucky, though.
Okay, let's do some history on Bucky first.
Because, you're a PA guy, right?
New York. Buffalo. Oh.
When did you first come to Montana?
89. That I came to Montana. Didn't move to Montana. Came here with a buddy in 89. My 75 Ohls Cutlass Supreme with a 350 rocket.
Magnet.
Swivel bucket seats. Just typical Great Lakes, rusty.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But we drove out here, backpacked in the Beartooths, fished the Bighorn, and then all around this area. But West was always, for me, the spot.
Mm-hmm. Were you a tire back then? Did you do all that?
Yep. I was time flies. Not professional.
But you were starting.
Yep. I was time flies.
A lot of great anglers come. I think Senya's from around that area too. There's a bunch of really good.
Yeah.
And then Richie Stroh. I mean, that zone, PA, New York, it's kind of all the same thing to me. Mm-hmm. That's the mothership. I mean, that's where the freaking boat landed.
That was, used to
fit. It happened there first, right?
Yeah.
I always say it.
Delaware.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that thing.
Yep, fish there. And then always bought a Pennsylvania license. Kind of fished the middle of the state from up at Slate Run in that area to State College to La Torte.
First time I went to the La Torte, I thought I was on a ditch. I thought that I wasn't on the river. People stared at me. I'm walking up. I don't know. No idea where I was. I'm going to go back. I kind of thought it was a bigger. It's kind of like when I came out here, I thought all rivers are giant, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I thought, I'd fished quite a few of them out there, but it's the first time I'm in the La Torte. So I'm walking up. I don't remember. I remember I pulled in and there's like a little dirt turn off there. There's a few cars and I started walking. There's a path.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go like 50 feet, and there'd be a guy, and they'd stare at me. I'm like, I'm going to look around like, am I trespassing or something? Right. And I never got fish because I get up, there's a guy in every bait, right? Or every thing. And they're staring at me like, don't try it. You're not coming. Don't get close. Right. I got what I was being told very quickly.
Yep.
And I'm like, shit. I says, this can't be the Latour. It's not. And then I saw, a video on it. Oh shit. I was on the Latour. I didn't get there early enough. I missed getting a spot, right? But I love it out there. Love that whole area.
I think it's a great area. I think Michigan, I bet, is very similar in that.
Very.
It teaches you stealth.
Yep.
Where here, and I still think it's a good thing to have here, but people kind of just walk right up to the mountain.
You can.
We're back there. I mean, you go like this, and you just watch a pool go. Just like, well, that's over.
Yep. Now the next pool is taken by the guy that was staring at me.
Yeah.
I've said that a million times. You know, that's my mantra. Stock more, cast less. Because when you grow up in that techie shit, that hands and knee thing and crawling around and observing and looking, you learn a lot. When you can just plop in that sumbitch, trip, fall, get up, drop your nymph out there and catch it, it's not quite the same.
No. Just describing how I fish.
Yeah, I know. That's why I said it.
Yeah.
I've seen you fish.
Yeah, but I think it's a great place to learn.
On our last podcast we just did, we were talking about journaling and hatches and stuff like that. So common back there where we were, you know, lots of people journal and it might've been out here too. I don't know, but journaling, but stealth and hatch matching. I mean, you think about it, it really started hatches, Coochie and Nastasi.
Absolutely.
And all of that. It was all, and then Swisher and Richards, where your Michigan connection came when those guys, and it's everything's in the same half a decade, right? Where stuff's just rolling up. And I always thought, because I lived in Michigan, that I always thought, okay, well, PA's where all those, because Swish and Richards hadn't showed up on the scene like they did in the early 70s, but it was just kind of the mothership, you know?
Yeah.
Where was Fly Fisherman Magazine at, you know?
That was, PA. Yeah.
And so I just got, and then look at all the superstars, right? All the super famous guys are coming out of there.
Yeah, I think of Marinaro's books and
Vince's book. I had a box of flies I was looking at. They're all Vince's flies that I tied that they looked like shit. I found this treasure trove of old fly boxes. Some go back to when I'm like 10.
Oh, God. That's awesome.
So cool. And I was like, that's where that journal thing came up. When we were talking journals, old journal stuff. But so when you were back there, because I talk about that stuff in Michigan and techie stuff. Was that like the whole hatch matching? Were you totally immersed like the rest of it?
When I first started.
How old are you?
I'm 61.
Yeah. So you're just 6 years younger than me.
Yep. And the guy I learned from when we went to this creek, he did this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm ready. You know, and he's like, ah.
Yeah.
No. We're going to wait. Now, I remember it was Hendrickson's first kind of late April hatch of the year. And you're just standing there like,
yeah.
And I came, you know, I was a spin fisherman, you know.
Me too.
I'm like, really?
But then
you wait and they start rising. And now I'm like, and he's like, let him get going.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how I learned. And
so for the listeners, Bucky said when he gets to the river, you just stand there and cross your arms and watch, right? For the people who aren't watching us.
Oh, yes. Yes. I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah. And you just wait for the bugs to come. Don't screw the pool up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Wait for the bugs to come. Let the fish get working and start fishing.
Would you consider yourself a master of Zen?
No.
Why not?
No, I don't know.
Maybe. You're up spin fishing and really want to kick one out there.
Yeah, that was it.
Like the rest of us.
Okay. So you came out here in 89.
Mm-hmm.
And was that just for a summer?
No, that was just a vacation.
Okay. Just
vacation.
A week or something, week and a half.
We did that first trip. At that time, I was, and same with my buddy Ronnie, working in a restaurant, waiting tables, bartending. And so you could take 3 weeks.
Nice.
In the summer, you know, we would just work, pick up doubles, do all that, stash up a bunch of money. Okay, we're gone for 3 weeks. And that's what we did. And just bounced all over. And Ronnie was more into the backpacking side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the next year, came out with Tommy, who you remember.
Sure.
He and his dad and another friend of ours, and that was it. We just would come every year. And then at that time, I was working with someone you know, Rick Kustich.
Mm, sure.
So I had a small ownership in the shop back there in Buffalo. And lost my total trade of thought there. You're coming out and,
with Kustich and you stowed up a bunch of money to come out.
Yeah, how'd you end up here full-time?
Oh, so anyways, Rick kind of wanted to get out of the shop. I wanted to move out here. Bob Morrissey, I don't know if you remember Bob, the mm-hmm. guided at Blue Ribbon, but he said, hey, you guys should get Bucky to work in the shop. And that was it. And I came out in 04.
Wow.
Moved out. Yeah. And that's been it.
So you're the longest standing employee.
Cam, although he's the owner now, right. But Cam started there when he was 16.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Because he grew up in West Yellowstone.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, yeah, his dad worked for the Forest Service.
Cam's one of my favorite people in the business.
He's awesome. He's
obviously, if you two have been together that long in the same place.
Yes, and haven't killed one another. Yeah. Yeah. No, he's been.
I was wondering if, you know, that whole dallying off too early and his thumb was maybe you just bit it off in a bar fight or something.
No.
Cam's missing his thumb. I said, bar fight? Or he goes, no, dallied off too quick. It's roping.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
I don't know if that's true either, but it's still a great story.
Yeah. No, he's.
So when you were, I get a question. When you're saying you're standing there. Did you continue that activity? Like, did you start nymphing back there, wet flying, or did you do other stuff?
Yeah. The most.
That's what we did.
And I just had an affinity for those soft tackles mm-hmm. and the old wets, you know, like sure. Coachmans and even just a Royal Coachman wet and mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. So, I fell from grace pretty quick.
I started with the wet flies as a child because my dad was a guide in the 40s, and that's all they did. Nobody threw dry flies. Mm-hmm. I mean, glorified wet flies, they'd fish them upstream. But once the 70s hit, and when everybody started hatches and selective trout and that stuff, when that stuff rolled out, then it was like pure dry. We didn't have many dry flies. Not like here. I mean, you can throw dry flies all day, Michigan. You're going to get your ass kicked most of the day.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to get a few brookies and little mm-hmm. juvenile brown trout stuff, but it just isn't going to happen, right?
When did the streamers start?
The streamer thing started in the late 90s. And
were you fishing them when you were young though? Were you fishing like Black Nose Day?
Oh yeah, yeah. Muddlers and stuff.
Okay.
But I wrote a note down about you standing there. And because one of the things that I think really, I mean, we fished passive swing. We did, wet fly mostly. It's like mm-hmm. a wet fly swing how we fish. Most mm-hmm. people fished them. And so, but I think the popularity of that was because when you said that standing there, because I was making fun of the guys in the last podcast or two of them ago, about bug catchers. They'd be up catching bugs to identify. Because right after hatches came out and everybody
carried the net.
Oh, the whole nets and seines and there'd be fish rising, right? So, dude, get down here. But, I think the popularity of streamer fishing was when you said you could just go fish, just like when we were spin fishing with mm-hmm. kids, wait for anything. You step in the river and you started fishing. And I think that's what really launched because when I grew up doing it, it was wet fly swing mm-hmm. and maybe you stayed for a hatch, right? You'd mm-hmm. fish a hatch, but you really just swung like muddlers and dace and coachmen. Mm-hmm. If you're wet fly, I mean, I kind of got started on the really old school, like number four, heavyweight, Parmesan Bell, bright fly, mm-hmm. cow dungs, coachman, not royal, but coachmans and just, the traditional quills, all the Fox series and all mm-hmm. that stuff. But they're pretty big, right?
Yeah.
And then the wet fly thing came later. And then we did some, we did some dry fly, and then as it got more techy, it seemed like there was a hell of a lot more sitting and no fishing. Like when I'd fish dries when I was 10 years old, but I would just go fish, right? Just go fish and fish and fish.
Yep.
And then it became this kind of like culture where you kind of European, where you waited on the fish.
Very British.
Very British. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of put a dampener on fishing to me. I mean, my generation of kids was like Chet and I, and it's like, you know, this whole waiting it out thing, like watching, reading, because Ring of the Rise, you know. And then how they, there's a book called Ring of the Rise where they, you know,
smutting rise.
Yeah. don't approach a smutting rise. Just, you know, do this. And so I think what really launched streamer fishing was these guys were just bored.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you mean? I can just go huck that shit all over. So just, yeah. Knock yourself up. Pretend to crank.
I never would have become addicted to fly fishing if that was the only option. Like it was the, ADD.
Well, you could swing because did you guys nymph fish? I mean, we didn't nymph fish much.
I didn't much. No, it was mostly either a wet fly or again, a streamer or dries.
Yeah, I mean, that nymph game didn't really, I mean, there were people that did it, but it wasn't like, if they did, they put it under a dry or they wet fly swung them, but you know, no real techie like following the emergence with them until that came along. Mm-hmm. But I think that was part of the what got people going. It was moving, right? Mm-hmm. To go out and sit.
It's active.
Well, we'd sit. It was nothing to go out and sit and not cast.
Right.
To wait for a fish and just nothing show. And it's like, shit, it's dark. Right. Out, you know, and that go. That's pretty boring.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's easy to journal that night, though.
Yes, it is. Still sitting here. Not casting. There were times I should say that I would do that, which would be evening spinner falls.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't get them here like back there.
No, that's all we did.
And but when you see them, you know, they're all going up river way up above your head and you're like, oh, please drop, you know. And that was something I would, you know, get in a spot, you'd stand there, wait. And then as soon as they hit the water, oh gosh,
that's about the only type of that fishing I do here is the EPRs.
EPR spinners?
Yeah, where you go out and you get your run, and then you just watch them and watch them hopefully start to descend.
Mm-hmm. I got 5,000 days on hex hatches sitting there like this. Oh, shit, just drop 5 degrees. We're screwed.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, it's too hot. They're going to fly for another hour. Oh, there's too many. Oh, crap.
Yeah.
White out.
Should have just been casting.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, so did you ever guide fly fishing?
A little bit back home. Okay. And that was for the lake run stuff. So lake run browns or steelhead. Not my thing.
Yeah, why not?
Uncomfortable silence.
That was because I don't want to
smoke out of your ears.
I didn't want to, you know, when you get a bad person, it's 8 hours with a bad person.
Yep.
Now, most people are awesome.
Yep.
But it takes one, and I got one where I was like, no.
Can't do it again.
It just was like, that wasn't fun. And I love being in the shop. Like being in a fly shop is home.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think I take that similar stance. I mean, there was one point where I wanted to guide, and then I started thinking about that. Like it takes a lot to be an effective fishing guide mentally.
100%.
Right? Let alone all of the physical work you have to do, but
all the credit in the world to those guys.
If you take away the fishing knowledge and the strenuous physical activity, it from my perspective is an incredibly taxing mental activity. And I ski instruct, which there's a lot of parallels between them. But what I find is if I have somebody I don't like ski instructing, I just have to be on the chair with them for 4 or 5 minutes. And then during the actual run, you space out. Now lunch is a whole nother deal, but generally you can kind of get away from them. In a boat, you're 2.5 feet.
Yeah,
that's as far as you're going to get away. Like you're in there. So I have the utmost respect for fishing guides, but I'm of that same opinion where I'm not sure I could do it mentally.
I think here is different too. That was lake run fish. Everyone wants to catch, you know, those giant brown trout and that, and it's crowded. And you get to the river and there's a bunch of people and they're in good spots and you're walking around looking for scraps in mm-hmm. a sense. And they're staring at you like, where's our big giant fish?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like,
oh. And you're that mentality growing up in the same shit, you know, steelhead salmon, brown trout.
Mm-hmm.
That mentality, there's a great podcast that Russ and Alex do about the guy who thinks he wants to be a trophy hunter in mm-hmm. streamers, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, he thinks he's just going to show up. And he says, 2.5 hours when that guy turns around, he's looking at his buddy and looks right through you. He says, he's here for the photo. He's not, you know, he's not really hunting, right?
Right.
And so, but yeah, when you have that mentality, if things, because you don't really see any pictures that aren't all superstar this, right? Mm-hmm. And so that mentality of angler is a...
Yeah, just different than here, I think. You know, where...
Well, even back there, the trout guys weren't like that. But the salmon was so stupid. But if you're steelhead or brown trout hunting for the lake runs,
mm-hmm.
they have an expectation.
Yes. Yeah. Where I think here...
Right after Roller caught that world record brown trout, whoa, on the Manistee. And he was gear fishing, right? Every guy that showed, you know, let's go down where he was. Oh, yeah, he's still sitting there, you dumbass. Other than he's hanging on the wall in Sparta somewhere.
How big was it?
I don't know, 42.9 or something. Oh, my God. I don't remember. It was quite a while ago.
Tim Roller?
Huh? Yes.
41.7 ounces.
Yeah, that's pretty close.
Yeah, that's big.
Yeah. Yes. Not compared to the ones I catch.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, that's a big deal. But I tell everybody, guiding either is or isn't, but most people think it is till they, I know very, very few guides that fish after the third year. You think of your whole staff, how many guys truly want to just go fishing all the time?
Yeah.
Nap, man. I know.
Young guys.
Yeah, the young guys, but on their third full-time year, if they roll 150 days or worse, if they go somewhere south, so now they're running 200 and some days, which we did in Michigan constantly. That wasn't hard. You could go all year.
Right? Yeah.
But I see very few people that continue to fish and love fishing, because if you don't fish, you don't love fishing.
Right.
After they've guided 3 years. So, I mean, it can be the kiss of death. Some people, I mean,
yeah.
Johnny, he's a freak.
Johnny.
Right.
Go every day.
Brash.
Huh? Trey.
Trey guides, yeah. What, 200 days a year?
Mm-hmm.
Close to, if not more.
I don't think he trout fishes.
No, he doesn't trout fish. He steelheads.
Yeah.
Yep.
But it, I mean, if your love, like we grew up trout fishing, it can put a hurt on it. So it's good to know where your home is.
Yes.
The shop's where it's at.
The shop's
you know, you
home?
Talk that, and some guys even get burnt out in the shops. I never did.
No, I still
I'd sit
love
there
it.
And I'm like, can't get out there to go fast. You know, guys come in, they're talking, and people tell me I just can't go out and do it after sitting and listen to it all day. I says, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
That should make it worse.
Yeah.
It you does want to be, you know.
Yeah.
You don't hear about guys getting skunked. They come in and tell you about how they kicked ass.
Right.
Yeah. You know, he might be the only guy on the whole river that did, but it's all right.
Yeah.
I'm right behind you.
Yeah.
No. Let's go.
So what is it about the shop that you love?
I like seeing the same... You get to see the same people every year at certain times of the year. So you, mm-hmm. so the relationships you build with people, you know, I like that.
Yeah.
That part of
totally.
It. Of course, all the stuff, right? I mean,
yeah.
I love all the tie-in stuff. I love seeing when new stuff comes out, you know,
I tell the guys that work for me, I said, if you can't have a good time in here, you're going to have a shitty life. I mean, you are surrounded by positive energy.
All
at
day?
Least in the mornings.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes
right.
in the afternoons when things, you know, hailstorm comes through or something. Maybe a little bit, but it just, you know, ups the beer sales.
So, right.
But it's generally speaking, it's not like going to your accountant, right? It's like you're
here
seeing
people
for
on
good,
their best day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really they're here on vacation.
Have. And if it exactly. And they're gonna leave and the new one's coming in, it's just as happy and just as exciting. It's
yeah.
really That's why I've told every kid that worked for me, every one of them, if you can't have fun here, you got a bad time coming because, you know,
if you can make this into a negative experience.
Yeah. And even the negative ones, you can turn around if you try hard enough. You can get it to, You can come visit it up.
Absolutely. Yeah. People come in there. Yeah. Once in a while, you get someone that comes in, they're grouchy, whatever. Yeah. Maybe you find out why they're grouchy. Maybe you can fix it. Sometimes you can't, but.
Maybe you're grouchy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it's me.
You know, I think fly shop employees like guides wear a lot of hats where you're like, I always joked about like when I'm out filming for Kelly, I'm like his caddy slash therapist slash like, you know, lunch lady. I need that, whatever. But then it's also, you know, we got to be in the right mentality to, you know, the filming adds a whole nother thing, right?
Sure.
When we're trying to get something out of it. But, you know, you wear a lot of hats when you're in the fly shop. Like, you're kind of people's therapist to a certain extent.
Like a bartender without the booze.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You got booze.
Yeah.
Wow. We got stuff hiding underneath that counter, too. Need a fireball? Let's get you going.
There we go. This will make it all better.
Yeah.
Does power ever go out up there?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think you get it
worse. Yeah.
I remember you talking about it in a podcast about.
Yeah. We're talking about, like, it's real fun to just start drinking beers whenever the power goes out. Hide them under the desk. That's like fun fly shop stuff that I'm sure an owner of a fly shop would hate that the employees are doing, but it's fun. All right. I wanted to ask you this. I heard this, I think it was on an Instagram post from Charlie Craven, where he said something along the lines of, let me see if I can find this.
We're going to repeat something Charlie Craven said.
Sort of.
You like Charlie Craven?
Yes.
Of course.
I've
never met Charlie.
He's one of my faves.
He's a great tire.
Oh my God. I've never seen him make a bad tie. I did too. I saw him screw something up at Shiloh down at the East. What is it? The East.
The East Idaho.
And I'm watching him. I'm hawking him hard, right? And he screwed something up, but he says, it's not bad. If you make a mistake, just go back and fix it. I'm like, prick. And he goes, I've watched Charlie, not as much as I've watched McPhail, but I don't know if I've ever seen him make a bad turn of thread.
Oh,
it drives me out of my freaking mind.
Yeah, he's really, really good.
Yes.
Okay, so Charlie said this. I saw it on an Instagram post. And after he said it, I started thinking about it, and I had a conversation about this idea the other day, but the person asked him, if you could start over fly fishing again tomorrow, would you? His answer was absolutely. And I was talking about this with my roommate's younger brother, a guy named Merrick, who's just like getting into, like, be really into fly fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Just started to throw streamers. He said his next thing, he's buying an 8-weight because right now he just has a 5-weight. And he had that experience that we always talk about where, you know, he's stripping this thing back to him and a big brown trout just came and annihilated it, right? And that's a lot of time. That's the introductory. Mm-hmm. It's the first time the drug hits your veins, right? And you're hooked. And he's so enthusiastic about it. And it just got me thinking, like, if I could flip the switch right now, and I'm, you know, nowhere near, I'm still so early in my fly fishing journey, mm-hmm. if you will. If I could go back to, like, bottle that enthusiasm, whatever that is, you know, 7 years ago for me, I don't think I'm at the point where I'm ready to jump back to the beginning. I mean, there's so much more for me to learn, but I'm curious as.
Oh, would I want to?
Yeah. Like, you know, you two are much more seasoned anglers than I am. Like, right now, would you throw it all away, everything you know, to jump back to the beginning of the learning curve?
No.
Why not?
Oh, I'm happy where I'm at.
Perfect.
I like to catch fish.
Yeah.
No, I get what the excitement that because you haven't seen it before.
The allure of what's new.
And maybe it's not the excitement that isn't there, but the joy's still there. Yeah. I still love being on the river or lake, but yeah, I wouldn't.
I wouldn't want to. I don't know. I like
the idea of being young again.
You mean that nothing would hurt when I was standing there?
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be cool. But I don't know if I'd want, no offense to your everybody young, but I don't know if I'd want to learn in this generation. It was a different, I really like the mystique of limited materials, limited resource, you know, you're having to figure things out. It seemed bigger than life then. Mm-hmm. And I liked seasons. I really liked seasons. I loved prepping for opening day. Start 2 months in advance.
Yep.
And I don't know if I'd want to learn on this platform because.
Yeah, because we can always go. Yeah. There isn't that.
Yeah.
That excitement of like season shuts down. That's winter.
I just don't know if it was so cool to get magazine. Remember when you would get the I can't even think of who they were back then, where you'd get Fins and Feather, I think was one of them. Mm-hmm. And Kaufman, Randall's, mm-hmm. Randall's deal was one. And you'd see product in there, right? But we didn't have fly shops in Michigan. There was one Orvis shop in, I don't know if they were there in the 70s. Gates was there, but they were only open 3 months a year, four, I think. It was just in the summer. I mean, Cal was a music teacher, I think. Can't remember, I own it. And Rusty, his son, took it over later, but there weren't really shops so much. But there was just such a mystique to it. There was and there weren't anybody doing it. I mean, I often talk about how many people I had to fish with, Chet McLaughlin and I and Barney Ewing and I'm sure there's somebody else. Well, Billy Robinson and I. But I mean, there weren't many, but I don't know if I'd want to, it's overwhelming the amount of knowledge. I say it's a great thing for kids now because there's nothing you can't. I don't care what it is in the world. What do you want to know about? You go on that little phone thing. And here it is. You got just like on flight time. I say it all the time. You have the 100 best tires in the world are on the phone. They're on your computer.
They're right there.
And if you want, you can message them. Can you imagine being able to message Dave Whitlock
when we were kids?
You know how many people try to message Kelly Gallup, but he doesn't know how to use Instagram?
I got to get into that a little bit.
I respond to most of them.
Maybe I do.
I tag them me so they know it's me, maybe not I you. Maybe I do. But a lot of that gets to you. I always tell you when people are writing in.
I get them when I can. And I like doing it. And I really think it's cool.
That's super cool.
It's like being in the shop. Yeah. I never got bored of being in the shop. I love when I can help, right? Yeah. I did have a little issue when the only thing we sell are pretty guns, but that one kind of gets me a little bit. I slide a hairs there and then I'm once in a while around here.
You ever try one of these?
Yeah, seen this? That's what I was telling a story many times about showing these kids about 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. And I showed them a hairs there. I said, you ever try one of these? He goes, oh, that's cool. What is it? And then he goes, where's the bead? I go, well, it doesn't have one. Huh. Looks right away from me. He's done, right? I said, how about this? This has got a bead and it was a Prince nip. And he goes, what's that? I go, it's just a bead. I go, it's, why don't you try one? And he comes back and goes, hey, man, they really ate that thing. I go, yeah, I know. They still eat some of this weird shit. But that part was a little more. But it's so cool when you get one that's all jacked up and wanting to learn all of it. And so,
learn the history.
Yeah, I don't, that's the other thing is that that phone thing, I don't, you know, computers and all that shit. There's the history's lost, right? When I learned, and I think I'd miss that. As much as I hated it back then, because I hated reading, and I hated, you know, having to learn slow like that and read something where you could just go and, what's he mean? Okay. Oh, there. That's what he said. I don't know. I don't think I would.
No, I'm glad I had.
I didn't lose my enthusiasm. There are days when it's too cold, it hurts like shit. I'm not going to go out with Johnny and hit 5 below 0 and freak my ass off.
Yep.
I think that's more knowledge than it is enthusiasm. Yeah. It's like,
that's wisdom.
You know, there's a lot of nice days left in the world, Johnny. Mm-hmm. We don't have to do this at 5 below with a 20 mile an hour wind. And we got a motor 5 miles. I don't think so.
Not doing that.
No, but I don't know. That's an interesting question. I'm going to think of that all night.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because I think I ebb and flow on it. It's like when I hit a plateau and, you know, I start to lose my enthusiasm because I feel like I'm stagnating. It's like, man, I would love to jump back to the steep part of the learning curve, right? Where I felt like I was getting better really quickly. Mm-hmm. And then I've always found there to be another steep curve after the plateau. And really it's my own fault for being in the plateau and not like trying to continually push myself to learn or improve. But there's days, you know, I'll go out like 3-4 days in a row, not find a lot of success, kind of be bored with what I'm doing. Like, man, this used to be really exciting for me. And then all of a sudden I'll find another little iteration mm-hmm. or something to focus on that kind of renews that. Like, this is the first ski season in a long time where I'm not thinking about skiing at all. Every day I'm skiing, it's been a horrible snow year here.
Right.
But I've had a couple good days. And even like, you know, there, it's kind of like you're thinking of the other woman while you're in the act, you know? Like I'm skiing and I'm like, but I could be fishing right now.
That's never happened to me.
Sorry, baby. Kelly's on the couch again for the next week.
I just can't, the questions still bother me. Because in some respects, if we could go back, how much faster could you, what more could you figure out? But I don't know. I liked canoes and Coleman lanterns and backpacks and things
all
like that
stuff.
And all that. I just, today, I don't know if I would dig it as much. I don't know. And there's so much other shit to do nowadays.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know. Would I end up being a, you know, no, I wouldn't. I was gonna say mountain biker. No, no.
And you never know.
I mean, yeah, you never know. But yeah. It's like, I don't know. It's so easy now to learn if you want to. Mm-hmm. That part is, which, shit, if I'd been fishing 7 years, the last thing on earth I'd think it was about a plateau. That would never, you get so much, you guys got inundated with information. Mm-hmm. You had no, there was no questions for you guys. I mean, the answers were there always.
I remember sitting during COVID or I'm working my remote job in meetings, not paying attention. I can't tell you how many times I heard Braden. I'm like, oh, fuck, what are we talking about? Because I'm watching some Jensen's video or reading some article about fishing. Like, well, those cameras just shut off. Do you hear that?
I don't know.
I'm going to go check. But yeah, I'd be reading something and we're still rolling. And a question would pop up and I just immediately Google it, yeah. Right? And it's not, I need to contemplate this. And then next time I go to the river, I have to experiment with it. It's just like, boom, there it is.
Yeah.
And so the curve is so steep at the beginning. And I don't want people to misconstrue this as me thinking I've mastered fly fishing, but it's more like have a question, solve it immediately.
Yeah.
And then, okay, well, it's going to take me a while to get to my next question as opposed to mm-hmm. the long form, you know, sort of critical thinking that is required to solve these problems where you might come up with a bunch of questions along that route as opposed to just having AI say, yes, you know, cat is hatch during the day.
As you were saying that, I was thinking of all the other sports in the world too. I mean, like, anything. I don't care. Look at these athletes coming out of high school that are going pro. And I mean, remember Johnny Unitas or people like that? I mean, there was just a whole different world. I mean, I was thinking of Billy Robinson. God, he was one of the best black belt, one of the best fighters ever. Right. But he did this forever. Right. Now I see these kids, I'll watch videos, these kids fighting. They're like 12 years old. They got I don't know what's different nowadays. It makes the training philosophies are so much different on everything. Mm-hmm. How many Tiger Woods were there, right? One. Now how many are there?
Now they're
coming out of everywhere.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what sport you talk about. I mean, skiers, I mean, race car drivers, for God's sake, 17, 16 years old coming out.
Right. That they've been in a go-kart since they were 5 years old or motor 4 years cruises. Old.
I mean, I don't care. I remember bass fishing. Kenny just, you know, 22 or 3 years old wins that thing. That's amazing, you know, but everything in the world where it's funny because you could do, I wish Andy Mill would interview that McInnes kid, right? And then do Roland Martin again. So one guy's 85, one guy's 23.
Right.
And he's talking about winning a big contract back when it was $5,000. That kid just signs for like $3-4 million probably, right? Just like, boom, just like that. And it's like, and I keep seeing these high school football players, you know, where they're, I was watching that thing with Penn State where they had, I think they said, it was on before a game. It was, and the guy was talking, I think they said they hired like 70 some people for recruiting because none of the coaches know how to recruit somebody that isn't going to be proud of being at school.
Right.
It's like, who gives a shit about your school, dude?
Yeah,
hit me for $5 million.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. I'm out of here. And it's like, well, the only reason they can do that is because they're that freaking good.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they've trained differently, nutrition, everything's different in the world. So it doesn't really matter what it is. Like, I don't know. I love my horses. I don't know shit about horses. Mm-hmm. Right. But I can find every answer. Doesn't mean I can implement it the rest of the way, but I can find it. Right. And so everything I look at now, it's all there. It's almost overload.
Mm-hmm.
Like where we used to tie 4 or 5 fly on a dozen flies, right? Start thinking about, oh my, I can't wait to,
I wonder
if they're going to tip over, do stuff. I don't know. God, it's so good. Cause I keep telling everybody on earth, this is the greatest generation in the world to learn. If you want to be a fly tire in particular.
Oh,
nothing's ever been easier in the world than right now.
Yeah. All of it.
Because you can rewind the son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Imagine rewinding Dave Whitlock. What'd you say, son?
No, that's the truth, though. It's all there. I do wonder, though, from a practical point, you still have to put the hours in. Do you know what I mean? That, yes, you can get the information.
Yeah, but I don't think you have to put as many, though. I mean...
Yeah, probably not. No, true enough.
You know, your casting thing, I still think casting's the most overrated thing on earth, but as far as you can go fish and have... Not that it's not really important, but... If you would have been like, I'll bring it. Oh, did I take it home? I got a 1959 Outdoor Life and it's Joe Brooks on mastering fly casting, right? It's an Outdoor Life segment.
Uh-huh.
And you see him roll kit. I couldn't figure out the hell he was doing. I'm looking at that and I can't figure it out. And I'm thinking, or I pull up you and John. Showing me how to do a roll cast. Three different.
Mm-hmm.
Your application, your powers here. This is what you do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at it, 1959 magazine going, wait a minute. Yeah. First of all, the picture's transposed. So he's got the wrong hand showing. It's like, the next one is okay, but it's right. Like, all this shit or tying flies when, you know, God, you got Western and Jack has you start with a freaking humpy.
Right.
Sure, you haven't figured out how to put the thread on the sumbitch yet, but you're going to do a humpy.
Right, thanks like, a bunch.
Yeah, and you missed a picture. And so I can see how it would be so easy, but overwhelming maybe.
Oh, my
but
gosh. Because you can just move to the next step.
Yeah.
Especially without mastering. It's very, mm-hmm. you.
Right, like, oh, like, right, what now, about, boom, I'm going to go here.
What I did. I thought I was really good at nymphing when I started spey fishing. It sucked. It was terrible. But I caught a couple fish and was like, all right, cool. Got that. And I think that's a little bit of the instant gratification that I've grown up with mm-hmm. is thinking that that was normal or that's what mastery was.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not because I'm not. But yeah, I think you guys are both right in that you can learn a lot faster, but you still have to put the time in, right? Like it... I remember going out and I watched like 3 different Pete Kutzer casting demonstrations of just like, you know, small tools. And I go to the park and try to actually work on those.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of trying to read the book and going, I don't know what he's doing. I have a very clear visual,
mm-hmm.
but then it's still on me to go try it, to do it, right? You still have to put the time in to actually cement the skill.
Right.
But you've cut the learning time down overall.
Yeah, I think there's a satisfaction though in figuring it out on your own too.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
You know, putting in that time on the water, you know, getting your butt kicked. We had a little Spring Creek back home called Spring Creek. It's the Seth mm-hmm. Green hatchery, which mm-hmm. first one to bring brown trout to the country. Anyway, above the hatchery, it was all wild fish and they were all, I mean, it was horrible. Just got my butt kicked all the time there. And I
that's in the first 20 years of my life.
Yeah.
And, everywhere.
So, but I go there with, a friend who told me, probably the guy at the shop in town at the Orver shop, but it was a Miracle Mitch.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, this is no beads back then. It was black thread that you wrapped cream colored floss over, just one, and then copper wire. And when it got wet, it was kind of cool looking. And then just a longer black head. Okay, tie them up, go there, and I whoop them. And I'm like, I got this figured out. Then you go back the next day. No.
Right. Had that day figured out.
Yep. That was it. So I think but it's fun to have done it on your own, to have figured out.
You know what my first midge was? I didn't know what a midge was. You know, if you go back and look at Ed Koch's book on midge fishing, there's no freaking midges in it. Everything's midget. Everything's small.
Oh,
we're talking about midges. It's like the freaking male flies.
Right.
There may be a midge in there. I don't remember, but it's nothing to do with midge fishing. Everything small was a midge, right?
Yes.
And I was fishing a pond, and I was back then I fished all chameleon, always, and kept eating my blood nuts. And I caught a brown and I took it home, killed it like always did.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice one. It's like a 19 incher, right? Put it and I opened it and it's really cool because it might be True Blood's book. I can't remember. It might be one of Berg. I don't know. I think it's True Blood's, but he's got a baking pan and he's got fish in it and he's pushing the guts out, you know, to see what was in it.
Yeah.
And so I'm did that on everything. Right. And so put it out. And it, mind you, this is 2 hours minimum. It's 40 miles from my house to there. Cars weren't that fast, especially mine. And it's like, and so I get home and I'm cleaning my fish in my parents' house. I'm 16, I think. And I cut and push it out. Don't even have to. Just probably 500 midges are in this. It's in a pond, the pond that I was fishing. And they're active. They're still alive and they're mosquito larvae and they actually hatched. And I saw the whole freaking thing in the pan, right? But they were tanny brown, right? Like the color of that neck. And I saw the whole thing and they're all wiggling around, you know, and I don't remember how many hatched, but I got to see it. And which still blows my mind that fish was dead for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And they're still alive in there. And so out they come. And I looked at it and I'm like, son of a bitch. It just came together.
Yeah.
They were eating I was using, I think they were odd numbers. I think it was like 3 pound or something. Maybe it was. I don't remember. Think so it was. And I snelled a hook. I just took that chameleon and snelled it. That sandwich looked so much like a, I wiped that pond out.
That's awesome.
Throw that thing out there and it's straight, you know, just, and if you broke one off, you just took another hook, slid down, snelled it, put it, cupped the end and go. Right. But so cool to have wit to, but that was all on me. Nobody taught me that. Right. That's what I think I would miss today.
Mm-hmm.
I had so little help.
Yep.
I mean, my dad was a guide in 1940, but he didn't really fly fish after the war and all that shit. He just he's, you know, baby boomer. He had babies and went to work.
Yeah.
And we lived down in the Great Lakes, you know, where the salmon were introduced.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all fishing in 68 on, you're throwing for cohos and kings and, you know, and all that shit. So the fly fishing thing, if it wasn't for magazines, you know, and all my buddies, we all got the same magazine. So it's not like we can call somebody.
Right.
You know, hey, let's call Joe Brooks and see what's going on here. Right. Yeah.
That is him on Instagram.
Yeah. Hey, and what do they call it? What is that? PM me or whatever they call it.
DM.
DM me. That's like, not very good with that either. But I think that part would really, to me, I would.
Yeah, I'd miss it.
I mean, you figured it out. You had to. And maybe it's flat ass luck. In my case, it was a lot of times. I mean, it just works. And it's luck, but
it was also
capitalized on it. Yeah. You're there and you go, hey, I just saw that thing pop out, you know? Well, and then I see some and you start looking. Things change, but you got to figure it out. I don't know if I would dig. I find it overwhelming. I love woodworking, right? Don't do much of it nowadays, but I still look at it all the time. And it can be overwhelming, the amount of info that comes at you that is so much at a time. You know, so much.
Drinking water through a fire hose.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, there's very few things that I would trade for that moment of figuring out what those midges were.
Oh, that's so cool.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like,
never forget it, right?
Ever. Never. It's like training your dog to whoa and point. And there are things that you just should do on your own without.
Yeah. I get the advantage of sending your dog to a trainer and having them finish your dog.
But it's.
I like doing it myself. Yeah, and you know what? If they're not perfect, that's okay.
Yeah.
You know?
You seen me shoot?
Yeah.
Yeah. If my dog could bite me every time, it'd be about a foot shorter. Yeah. That'd be hard on Kelly.
Because it starts out pretty short.
Well, your dog does bite me every time.
Yeah, well, for a reason.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I get it. No, I think
that's an interesting question. I'm gonna be up all night thinking about this.
Yeah, the
personal... Do you have any of those aha moments like where you did one of those for holy shit, it was so cool that it was you? And I mean, I probably can't put you on the spot.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there are in there. I'm trying to pull one out, but I'm
In the park, I want to ask a question. So you're a park freak.
I do love the park. Yeah.
I've stalked you a couple, three times in there.
Have you?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
I did it to Renee Harrop, too. That's pretty high cotton.
That is good.
I stalked his ass. I watched him for a half hour or more. This is cool as shit. Did the same thing to you. I did it on the cliffs once. I just dropped off the backside. You were coming down the cliff pool below Barnes. And, yeah, I watched you for, I don't know, 40 minutes probably. You had somebody with you, too. I can't remember who it was.
If we're just saying it, I've stalked you before, too.
Yeah.
You were down below the West Fork.
Any superior angler I see, I stop fishing. Yeah. I just watch.
Do you remember Henley Ashman?
Oh, of course I remember him. So he was awesome.
Him and Jack Ritter. Did you ever meet Jack?
That's familiar.
I don't think he worked out. He guided for somebody out here, but I was with them. So they were like my first fishing friends. They worked at the fly shop in Seattle I went to.
Okay.
And like we became buddies. And then I've told this story before, but in the winter when I was working out here, because this whole thing happened fast, I'd kind of moved to Sun Valley. So I'd stopped seeing them. And then that next winter, I'm behind the counter and some guy walks up to me and goes, "Braden?" I'm like, "Henley? No shit." And he's like, "No way, I'm here with Jack." And so I think it was actually, I don't know if it was that trip or the next time they came out, but I fish with them when they're out here now. And we were floating down from Pine Butte down to Lyons. And we're coming around the corner and Henley goes, "Oh my God, I think it's Bucky."
Why didn't you stop?
I think we did.
It just stopped and
or Henley yelled at you because he wasn't sure it was you or whatever. But I pulled the boat over well up above and we watched you for a while.
Oh, I wondered if you did. I don't remember. I just don't remember that happening.
You were river left.
I was like, "Hey, Bucky. Oh, hi."
Yeah,
I don't know who that is.
I think that's what it was.
Yeah, when you work in a fly shop, that gets pretty common.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Henley wasn't sure if it was you or not, so he didn't. But the whole time I was just like, "Oh my God, fucking living legend over there. I get to watch cast.
Not even close.
Yeah, so I've stalked you as well.
So, park, you're a big fan. What's your favorite?
Yellowstone.
Type of fishing?
Type of fishing.
Well, not necessarily. I don't like, stone's cool, but I mean, what would you, like when I first started fishing here, I just loved the fire hole, right?
Still love the fire hole.
And I mean, I haven't been in the park in 14 years now.
No kidding.
Yeah, I just got pissed off one day and I hold a grudge.
Really?
Yeah. And so this was my year to go and I didn't. And so next year I'm going to. But
so
the fire hole, the Madison, the stone. I love to go fish dries on the stone.
Oh.
And up high. And
great swing river too.
Yeah. So what's your
I will say and just to throw this out, the fire hole's still a favorite. Mm-hmm. I know it's not big fish. But the dry fly, what I love about that river is you can take a rank beginner, put on a soft tackle, put them in a riffle, and they're going to hook fish. You can take a seasoned person, put them on a flat with funky currents and a fish sipping whatever, and have 8-inch fish go, not good enough. That's what makes
What's your biggest fish in the fire hole?
Landed probably in about 16. That's uncommon. I did have one. I was fishing a bamboo rod up in Biscuit Basin. Mm-hmm. And PMDs, catching your typical 8 to 12-inch fire hole fish. And all of a sudden, I hook one, and the rod just goes, whop, snap, gone. Mm-hmm. No idea.
I had the shocking guys one day. They were in there. And asked him what the biggest fish is. You're getting fished over 16 inches in here? He goes, oh, there's tons of 20 plus in here. I said, huh.
Well, yeah, yeah.
I didn't want to say it, but I've never heard of one. I was fishing with Bill Devane up by Biscuit. And my biggest two, same thing, 16.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back in the 80s. And it was way up. But you know, the big parking lot, what's that one called? The giant parking lot up there where you can't go over the bridge anymore. It's the biggest parking lot on that river.
Midway.
We used to go up above that when you could drive over that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Go way mm-hmm. up. And that's right.
Oh, that's off Fountain Flats.
Fountain Flats. That's
right. That's it. Yeah.
So I got a 16 up there. I don't remember what I'm, but, and I was fishing below there with Devane, and I got what I'm sure it was 17. I said, come down here. Get down here. I'm just like a freaking kid. And it's big, right? And I got it on a, got on a soft tackle, but I just can't remember what it was, but a traditional, like, kind of little yellow soft tackle of some sort. I don't remember what it was. And Bill's like, he's being Bill, right? And he gets down there, and I'm measuring it, trying to measure it in the net, and he drops it, and it goes swimming away. I go, so I'm still not legitimately, still have a legit one over 16. I'm not even sure about the 16, because, I mean, did the whole rod thing, but
right.
It looked like a 16-incher, but... Could have been a fat 14, 15, who knows? But I mean, one.
Oh, yeah.
I've got one.
Yeah. Right. There's not. Now, I will say this. John Jurasek.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't count. He's too good.
He is. There's big fish in there.
Yeah.
Bigger, let's say 16, 17-inch mm-hmm. fish. More than we think.
Yeah.
But he is a stand back.
Yeah.
He knows the spots. I don't ask. I mean, I don't know that he would be. Would tell me, but sure. But he every year gets them. But we had a guy come in the shop. It was up on the fire hole. I'm like, oh, how'd you do? You know, and he's like, I got a 25-incher. And I'm like, wow, that's that's a big exaggeration. You know, I didn't say that. I'm thinking, I'm like, 25. And he's like, yeah, and a streamer. I'm like, in the fire hole. Yeah, yeah. And he pulls out the camera. And that's when it wasn't the cell phone thing. It was a camera. And he pulls it out, and I went, that's 25 inches. I mean, it was like...
I bet I've seen
that picture. It was gigantic.
So there's one.
Yeah.
I've seen a couple of those at the falls. Now, I haven't seen them. I've seen pictures people have caught.
Yeah. This was above.
Right.
I mean, it's crazy.
I think I've seen that picture.
It was nuts to see that fish.
There's something... that doesn't let me throw a streamer in the fire hole.
No, I agree.
I drive
the soft tackles.
I've been up there, and Devane says, what are you doing? I don't know. I just can't quite bring myself to do it.
Maybe,
although.
Maybe I'll do it for you this year.
I may do it someday. I don't know. It throws me back. I love going up there and I don't care about that 8-inch fish. That's great with me.
Mm-hmm.
And fishing dries is just fun as shit to me.
That's a fun river.
But I do like going up to the Yellowstone where there's 20 plus all over the place. Eating dry flies too.
Yeah.
Eating ants.
That's a pretty, I think I like that too. They're the trout.
Yeah.
You know, it's the Yellowstone cutthroat. So that's what kind of makes that
being
special
up high,
too.
I mean, up above the falls, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was with a guy, Bob Shaw, and I were over there once way back. And Bob has sailed around the world. He's a professional, did all this racing, been through the Bermuda Triangle, all this shit. And we were a mile above the falls, mile and a half, I don't know. And I came down, I was fishing up above, just had a great time, come back and he's went up this bank up to the road and got a van pulled up there and he's sitting there, he's buck naked. I'm like, the hell are you doing? He's 50 something, right? And he goes, and I look at him, he's bleeding everywhere. His fingernails, he's missing fingernails and shit. His face is all scratched up. Bear, tear your clothes off?
I mean, like, right, right.
That's a pretty good fight, and you're tearing your own fingernails off, right? And he said that I said, what the hell happened? He goes, I fell in. It's just freaking deep, right? And grandma's not really ripping or anywhere, nothing crazy. And I said, what do you mean you fell in? He said, I fell in. I says, what happened to you? He goes, I panicked. I said, what do you mean? He goes, I started swimming. I said, all I could think of was the falls. We'd been at the falls, went down to the falls, we ate lunch at the falls or something. And I says, a mile above it. And he goes, I know. Trust me, I know. I says, you've sailed the ocean blue. You've done it all. I mean,
right.
He lived on Lake Michigan. It kills more people than anything. I said, he goes, and you could see it where he went like this and you could see his elbows are all bloody. And he was digging in that gravel.
Oh my God.
And he fell when he got close and cut his face up and stuff. And I'm like, you gotta be shitting me. And he said, yeah, I just couldn't get it out of my mind.
Well, going over the falls would be a bad way to go.
That reminds me of something
it'd be quick.
Yeah.
I saw a video this morning from, you know, Tim Rollins, right? He's Line Speed Jedi.
Oh, yeah, yes, yeah, yes, yeah. Yes.
Do you know Tim Rollins? He's a big steelhead guy now, and I think he's kind of an eccentric dude. His videos suck, but I love them. Like, you can never hear what he's saying. He cuts them all funky. He's an incredible spay caster, mm-hmm. both hands, any rod, doesn't matter. And he's been trying to push people to practice, like, deep water spay casting.
Uh-huh.
So you go get on your knees in a shallow flat mm-hmm. and practice, you know, when the water would be up above your waist. In this video, he puts it up, so damn funny. I can't remember what song he put on it, but it's something like the, you know, you had a bad day. and he goes in there and he tries to get down onto his knees, and it's like a 20-second slow motion fall until he's full on swimming. And he gets down and goes, so the water's cold. cracking
good
up.
Shit.
Yes. Yeah. He's a long bellies and stuff like that.
Yeah. Hmm? All long bellies, real traditional stuff.
So you've been swinging since you're back there, right?
Yeah, with single hand.
Yeah,
rods.
No, I thought you were two hand in it. I don't remember Rick like when he wrote the book because I did flies for him in that book.
Yeah, and
I don't remember anybody swinging two handed back there then.
No, he started. He had. He was playing with it a little, I'd say, mm-hmm. back then.
Yeah, because I think he fished with Walt one time too, and he was on there and. Walt was the only guy I knew that did it, but.
Yeah, it was always, you know, 10'7", 10'8" weight. You know, that's.
Or no, it was John Clusing that he was one of the two of them. Yeah, I didn't. So do you two hand at park?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. On the Madison and the Yellowstone, I will, mm-hmm. you know, not the fire hole, you know.
No.
But the Madison and the park.
You could dap it.
That is true. But those two I liked two hand. Actually had a carry make me as he does a 10-foot, 4-inch, 5-weight single hand spay, mm-hmm. but I had him build it with a longer handle, so it's really like a 2-weight, and that's a fun
micro
one.
Micro.
Yeah, that's kind of fun on the map.
You were single handed when I was stalking you.
Yeah.
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 A long rod though. Maybe it was that, but you weren't. You, well, it's like I told the story about fishing with Harry Lemire and he had a date where he didn't two hand anymore, but he still single hand spayed everything. He still grabbed the butt. And it was the same thing. I said, it's just got a shorter rod.
So, right. Well,
there was some rule. I can't remember what it was, like October 8th or 15th or whatever the hell it was. And he no longer wouldn't use a two hand spay. Use single hand spays, but he, so it's probably the same thing.
Yeah.
Because he's still, you know, I still see him. Not all, he could single hand him and he mm-hmm. did a lot.
But, that's back in using double tapers too, probably.
Yeah. Or triangles.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we used. Triangle tapers.
Yeah. They roll cast like a.
I still love that line.
Yeah.
So I've got a very self-involved question for you, being that I'm interested in the answer. Let's say you're going to go fish two-handers somewhere downstream from us mm-hmm. on the walkwade stretch of the Madison.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of fly selection, because you still you do a lot of Skagit, right?
More, well,
are you more on the Scandi side?
More Scan, always kind of have.
Okay,
it depends on the time of year, yeah. Right? So right now, I mean that water's cold.
It's cold.
I'm fishing a Skagit and a tip, yeah. And looking for something deep and slower. Once it's summer, once they're going, oh, I'll come up and do that.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's Scandi, yeah. Monoliter, soft tackles.
So I basically threw Scandi lines all summer and late into the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Even got some fish to eat streamers in cold water.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, obviously not unheard of. But in terms of fly selection, because I threw a lot more soft tackle-y stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Still generally bigger. I can't get away from, I like throwing bigger flies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about, Lucky Buckies are big in the soft tackle
sure.
world,
yeah.
Right? So I'm still on the bigger end of soft tackles. What goes into selecting a fly? I mean, I'm sure there's some bug life. What's your process?
Well, one, if there's a hatch, now I'm going to fish something that matches,
right?
Right?
And you're trying to match size, color.
Size, color. So if it's summer down there, evening caddis. So let's put on something with a green body, maybe a brown soft tackle on it, right? If that's a caddis emergence. If it's PMDs, you know, it might be either a pheasant tail nymph or a pale yellow wood duck tail type little soft tackle. So I'll try to match what's coming off.
Yep.
If nothing's going on, then it's attractor fishing, right?
Yep.
I mean, Lucky Bucky, the shaky variant, you know, maybe it's
some taking a picture of Lucky Buckies for you to, for you to get something with reference to the size of them.
You know, maybe it's a winged, a large, you know, big size, well, to me, big, a size 10 winged, you know, wet fly, you know, a lead wing coachman. And a lot of that is just like, yeah, I think that'll,
yeah.
You know, I probably fished the Lucky Bucky, which I didn't name. Hoovler named that fly.
Did he?
Yep.
That's cool.
But anyway, that's really what it is. I'll start with something like that because it's big.
Right.
And there's nothing going on. And like, well, maybe I can draw them up with that. And then if they're not into it, drop size, maybe go to a shaky variant or getting a winged wet.
So how much do you think fly selection matters when there's not a hatch? Like when you're not hatch matching, do you think that there's a lot of flies that would draw up that sort of
yes.
random eat?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, there's plenty of, I'm sure, other great big soft tackles or wets that those fish would come to. It's confidence.
Yeah.
I think
I'll
for
tell
me,
you, I have the utmost confidence in the Lucky Bucky after this year.
It works.
I got three different types of trout, whitefish, steelhead, and a pike all on
the pike is kind of crazy. Yeah. Obviously, it's not a pike fly, and I wouldn't use it if I were pike fishing. But the fact that one ate it is kind of cool.
This is I talked about the fly time Noms had called the abortion.
Yeah,
that's the right color though.
That's the
that orange.
That's always it's always that we never change the color ever. I got it's. Probably used up a little bit, but I sent you Bucky's flies.
Okay.
But cool. That was all there was to it. And it was always pheasant, you know, like a under feather, you know, not a phylo, but that the just fluffy, shitty feather.
Yeah.
When it's in there, it looks like nothing. And that's the only big wet fly I ever fished. That was probably in the 70s.
That's great. You know,
because I did all, like you said, lead wings and cow dungs and all the traditional, you know, beaver kill stuff, all those flies. That leadwing coachman.
It's a great fly.
Shit out of that thing. They eat the shit out of this thing. And it's a great little caddis pattern.
Yep. Great fly. Yeah. But that color, I mean, Lucky Bucky was because of, I chose that color because of a partridge in orange.
This
which is still a great fly.
I think
fly.
This is a little more orange than the one that I used mostly. The one I used was, I would say it was a little more in the reddy tan colors. Okay. This just, I just, when I found that shit ton of flies in all my old boxes, this was in there, but I remember it being not as orange as you, as yours.
Okay.
But it's, again, going back to the 70s, it's
sure.
A lot of beer.
A lot of beer.
But that's the size.
A lot of whiskey.
And that's all we did. Right? Yeah. And when it was, if ever it was raining, that's all we fished. Just swing that thing. Oh my God. Just loved it.
That will affect too.
I like
bright sun or dark.
Yeah.
Dark days, I fished the black version.
Yeah. Right. I sent you this picture of the two of them.
So,
I don't recall really swinging too much on big bright days. When we did, it was more like brighter, like Coachmans, like Royal Coachmans or Mini Muddlers or, you know, something like that. A few of my dad liked the Queen of the Waters.
Oh, yeah.
And the Grizzly King.
I was just looking at those. Like
the red, that orange and the Queen of the Waters.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other color was green, and that's the only colors we ever did. I don't know why I never, it's it, period. Yeah. And the really bright days was the green, and the really, a little less was the orange, and we were, that was it. There was no, which really amazes me that we never said, well, how about a pink one, or how about a purple one, or whatever the hell. No, I don't know, maybe we didn't have the shit.
Right.
It's not like you walk over and see 50 colors or something in a
right. You know. And you probably didn't, maybe you didn't need to, right?
Yeah.
Like, well, I don't know. This is working, Mom.
Right.
Well, we weren't getting, you know, I that was the other thing. I don't remember my expectations being as high as they are nowadays. You know, although you were always looking to limit out.
Right.
You know, but that's a 5-fish limit, right? But even back then, we were going into the catch and release, but we carry creels for a while.
Oh gosh. And I used to love to have a shore lunch too.
Yeah.
You know, we do that once a year. Take the, those canned white potatoes. They look like quarters in a frying pan, butter flavored Crisco, whack it, gut it. Oh,
done.
Great lunch.
Oh my God. It was my knitting club that I belong to. It's 12 buddies that we've been like this since we were children. I got a picture of Kevin Stewart and we're sitting there and I don't know if it was an overnight. I think it was just, we were there a long time, but there's a Y sticks over there with the, I don't know what you call it. It's got the stick between it.
Oh yeah. 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 With all the trout.
They were bass and we're ice fishing.
Oh, okay.
And big ice, you know, all that heavy red, you know, same thing you'd hunt in, wool clothes, and got the fire going. There's a pan there waiting to cook up the pike. I love pike. Pike's my favorite.
Yep.
And bass, so, but there's a largemouth on there, and I think there's 3 pike hanging there. They're all hammer handles. But, you know,
yeah.
It was lunch.
That's awesome.
Those good times. So I said, light canoes and Coleman lanterns and, you know, frying pans and Crisco. And you get there and you got dry goods. And whatever you can kill.
Yeah.
I've always prepped for not killing anything. Yeah, I bring enough food for me to survive without.
I don't know the last time. I don't like trout, so that's easy.
I'm the same thing. Once in a while, and I haven't done this in a long time, and I should, is a brookie. Mm. Just whack a brookie in the park.
That's what killed me. My dad used to send me out to the creek in the morning. He'd go, and he'd always bump his hand.
Trout and eggs?
Nothing bigger than this. And then, you know, I don't know. But I would do it and get these things, and they go in the pan, head on, white eye looking at you. Looking at you. And it's like, kind of spoiled me for brook trout and eggs, right? I ate them. I just didn't like them, but... Mel will go ice fishing, and she'll even whack a brown trout. I wouldn't eat a brown trout with his mouth. I just think they're disgusting.
Yeah.
And brookies I can tolerate. I've never eaten one. I just mounted a cutty out of Henry's.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so old. I mean, I've been in, I haven't, I quit doing, I just stopped. I don't know why. I just quit for 3 years. I just stopped, walked out of my studio and just said, I'm done. Not really intentionally. I just didn't do anything for three. And I get this freezer full of shit people. And it's usually hardly anybody. Well, none of them even have names on them. Phil Barker will bring me. I mean, he's brought me some like 17 pound cutties I've gotten there. They die, right? And they can't resuscitate them. And he brings, doesn't want to just throw them away. And do you want this to mount? I say, yeah, sure, I'll do it. So I got a freezer full of some bitches, right? This fish is probably 7 years old. It's as, I don't have anything in here as orange as that meat was like that, maybe more just, you know, just shrimp eaters, right?
Right.
That I've never ate a cutty. And they're,
I haven't either.
They bring him. So I don't know if I would
like. Are you going to eat one of those ones?
Hell no. That's 7 years.
If that's where you're going, I was like, please.
No,
don't
no.
Do
I
that.
Just thought, but if I was going to eat a trout, I just don't. We go up on the lake and ice fishing and out of the hole in the pan for her. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, good luck with that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a brown trout. Ugh.
Yeah.
You know, it's a rainbow.
Like swamp poop or
yeah,
something.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, it's a rainbow. And it's cold. I said, man, I used to always go out on New Year's or Christmas Eve and at Steelhead and I would catch a 5 pounder and it would 5 to 7, nothing bigger. And then I would stuff it like a turkey and bacon on the top and onions, stuff it with bread, you know, and that's great. But yeah, can't do it anymore. But if we had bluegills, you know.
We had a lake.
If I really, if I had perch, even better.
Yeah. We had a lake outside Buffalo, Silver Lake. And in the spring, when they're coming into spawn, and they are those big, barely get your hand around them.
So I tell everybody, that's how you learn to fly fish. Bluegills on the beds. They have the perfect eat. Timing's got to be just right. And they fight like a, you know, 18 inch trout. You can't go anywhere. It's the greatest. Yeah. It's a paper plate swimming around out there.
Exactly.
Right? It is like, that's the greatest. But yeah, not a fan of either. But where's that going?
Yeah, that was
don't remember.
Eating fish. But yeah, I used to love a size 8 sneaky Pete, because the little ones can't get the 8 hook in their mouth. So you'd flip that sneaky Pete and just watch the wakes coming. Get those, but fillet those, fry them in a pan, and have a bluegill sandwich. Oh,
hard to beat.
God,
if Jerry was here. We'd hear all
Jerry
about it.
Go, oh,
Jerry's right now. Oh, you don't know shit about bluegills. I'll teach you how to cook a bluegill
in a pan.
Yeah, I think I would miss that part too of today.
Yeah.
Like the whole, I've said that on podcast before. If you'd have told me when I was 10 years old, I couldn't bring my creel home or God help you if I couldn't bring a steel, because I'd go fish the lake or, I mean, I'd go out gales and fish to get the mouth of freaking waders as big as, you know, for you. And I'm a 80 pound, you know, 10 year old and I'd be out by myself in that waves in Lake Michigan. Nobody, I mean, you just could, right?
Yep.
Throwing little Cleos out for him.
Oh.
Come home with a pair of 8-10 pound steelhead. If you'd told me I'd let those go, I'd be jacking cars.
Yeah.
I guarantee you. I mean, I used to bring that shit home and then my dad, if it was too much, I'd take it up we lived on this subdivision, little tiny thing. Two old ladies at the top of the hill, another old lady at the other side. I also did their lawns. So it was a little kind of I'd walk up, knock on, hey, Melly. Want a fish? Oh, that'd be great. Plop them down 8 pound steelhead. There's two sisters that live there. Shit, that'd feed them for a week, right? And Richard, shit. And then, you know, I was always hoping it may come when I time to mow the lawn, which it only let me do that. The one that you may push mower without
Oh, God. The real thing. Yeah.
Buck, right? I gave you $40 worth of fish last winter. But I mean, I don't think, maybe today the kids just grew up with it, but it was kind of a pump your chest thing.
Oh God, yeah.
You know, it's like check it out.
Look what I'm a hunter gatherer, man.
Exactly.
It's like taking care of the
family. At least some whitetails. Yeah.
Yeah,
that trout's
coming. That's right. That's right.
How about them grouse?
So we used to just keep a bucket. I grew up going to my grandparents' place up on Lake Wenatchee a lot, and it was kind of like a, you know, like you draw a hangman to play the game, you know. It was that shape, right? So it kind of wraps around a little bit, and it was a really, really old dock. I think it was built in the 20s. So it's all built like log cabin style underneath, which is just so much protection under there for fish. And so there were sculpin, and then there's some little kind of white fish under there. We grew up fishing there, and you know, we had a bucket on the dock. Catch a fish, put it in the bucket. And I'm sure that water gets so warm in there. We killed so many fish. We're feeding them salmon eggs. But we still had that. Like, I remember.
How big are these fish?
Oh, there to, I mean, maximum, like the biggest ones were 6 inches. We did see sculpin eating other sculpin, which was cool. And there's always like an apex one in there that would go eat the little ones. And it's funny how much all of these streamer theories make sense now, given, like, you know, kind of going back to these memories, but about the puff your chest out thing, like, me and all my cousins and siblings, we all had competitions as to who was going to be the king fisher, right? Who was going to get the most and the biggest and all this stuff. We just didn't kill him. We put him in a bucket, accidentally killed him, and then threw him back.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, this guy that taught me how to fish, Tom Noms, he was in the paper, right? And he was always steelhead. He had a thing in really early in the 60s, late 60s, about, and it was in the Detroit Free Press, because people didn't know there was steelhead in the Great Lakes until the 60s, right? Okay. They were put in the Great Lakes 11 years before they put brown trout.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, they sat for, that's why they use them for some replantings. But he had pictures in the, I have them at the house still, and newspaper clippings, right? And when I was a little kid, I don't know how old, fifth, sixth grade, maybe, something like that, my dad, it's opening day, and we go to this buddy, Bob's house. What was his? I don't remember. But Bob's house, he had a 100 yards of creek. Steelhead come up it. Browns are always in it, right? Mm-hmm. Acme Creek. And my dad and the other dentist, you know, he was supposed to be a, my dad wasn't a dentist, the dentist, my dentist. They're in there, and it's kind of shitty day. And they go up to the big pool, and this one, you know, it's like, 7-8 pools in this whole creek. And so they're just like, they don't get anything. So they go up and they start drinking coffee, right? And I sit down in two holes and I limit out. And I get 5 or 4 steelhead, all little ones, all juvies, you know, like 20, 21-inch, 22-inch fish, and a 18-inch brown. And I come back up with my creel, things dragging, right? And they're like, how'd you do? I said, good. How'd you guys do? Thinking they really killed it, and they probably got big ones, right? I said, well, we didn't get anything. And I plopped that son of a bitch out on the, right there on that picnic table. Arnold Schwarzenegger never had a better chest shot than I did right here. I'm standing, and they wrote something in the newspaper about the writer. Oh, shit. I don't remember who it was back then. And he said that junior angler tops, you know, something like that. And I don't know. I think my name was in it, but I don't remember if it was. But the point was, I kicked your ass. That was the beginning of the end. If you'd have had to come back and say, yeah, I got 5, but I let them all go. Yeah, sure you did.
Yeah.
You throw them out on the table, the picnic table. It's like, eat it.
It's literally flopping it out on the table, right?
Yeah. And it was like, I don't know. Nowadays, I don't know. I guess it's what you grew up with, but
yeah,
it was pretty cool to come back with one.
Oh, God.
And I think you'd be hard pressed to find anybody. Steelheaders did it too. I mean, there were guys that let him go for sure, but not if it was a big one.
That's coming home.
I spent plenty of, I paid a lot of bills with those fish. Yeah. And it was cool.
All right. Well, that's a long episode we've done.
So. Cool.
Let's wrap it up. Bucky, thanks so much for being
here. Oh, thank you.
Bucky, definitely going to have you back on. I mean, we could do
I could do that
infinite
all day.
Number of these things.
Yeah, I have a big round of question for Kelly, too. So
go.
So
we never finish in.
Yeah, no, we don't.
Oh, okay.
No, go for it. Yeah.
So this is, it's a streamer question. So last year, it's funny because you've been talking about Bates' book. Mm-hmm. And I was tying some flies from that. Old bucktails, Warden's Worry, red and white bucktail.
Warden's like one of the OGs.
It's a cool fly, you know.
Whole story. Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
So swinging them with the spay rod, No. And I think swinging those, they need to be animated. That a single hand rod is a way better tool for those type of streamers.
Yeah, those flies were never really designed to fish fast. Or, I mean, they really, you know, did a lot of up and across kind of. They would jig them a lot of times. Just like we had a guy write me a letter, like, told me I should read these books. Like, I said, okay, good. I've had them on my shelf since I was 12.
Trip A Field.
Yeah, I've seen that spot. Yeah, yeah.
I did forget the several. I was already reading a different one. I was reading the original one, 1950 version. And so he was talking about the 72 version, I think, but the Troth Bullhead. And he's talking about how they'd throw them up and let them just sink, right? Because we used to weight the shit out of them. And that was the idea, is get them down and they would jig them. You stop. It was invented here, the Troth Bullhead. That's one that's in. You remember that's in Trout, Joe Brooks' book.
Yeah.
And there's the blondes, and there's that, and a muddler, I think, beside it. And, but yeah, I think they tube out pretty much. I mean, I would assume if you get them, they're on a hang, just fishing the dangle. But I never had really good luck with them either. I always had much better luck. You know, like, when I was, before all this streamer thing happened, when we went out and really truly tried to figure something out, that fly that I showed you, the abortions, what he called it, he threw that across stream, right? And he would put a little tiny mend in his line, and he would just tap it and trying to get that thing to breathe. Do this, right? And we're on the Manistee, which is very, it'd be like being on the Mo, right?
It's okay, slow, big.
Right? Yeah, just, not big, but I mean, just slow.
Okay.
You know, very placid. And we do that. And so I used to do a lot of that with bucktails. And 9.3 was big back then on that river. And so you'd throw it across and get it to go, and then just kind of twitch it, right, like this. And occasionally give it a pull, but not really too often, like to get it away from something. You know, light should have clicked down. Something's there, a tree or something. You'd pull it away, and I was like, wham, you get a fish. Like, oh, you didn't really put that. You did that in the beginning. I never really did well with them fast you know, like you would a steelhead fly. Not at least me, I didn't.
Yeah.
And the guy that I fished with, Tom, the guy I talked about before, he would his head down and straight down river, dredge him. I hated it. I mean, just absolutely hated the style. Caught a lot of huge fish. He caught, but I mean, you lose a lot of flies that way too. Michigan's all trees, just like back home.
Sure. It's like, oh man, root balls and
everything you can lose a fly on. But yeah, I find it much. We did a show and I haven't fished a Wardens in a long time. You're doing the tan body one, the yellow body.
Yeah. It's kind of that ambery, whatever color with the brown bucktail.
There's a couple like that are different. There's two phases, but I never did well with that fly. I fished the shit out of it when I was a kid. My dad fished it, you know, because he had Bates' book, whatever. And or didn't fish it. He told me it was a good fly. I don't know if he ever fished one, but he would tell me, and I'd go fish that son of a bitch to death.
Sure.
It's like what it was, but the ones that I did better with like that had to be, I didn't do as well with bucktails. I did with feather wings.
Light spruce, dark spruce.
Yeah. I mean, you go into Bailey's when you're a kid and read that wall, and it seems like 2/3 of the fish in that, you know, the diagrams of them, it's either a light spruce or a dark spruce.
And so, still a great fly.
Yeah. I mean, we did a show where we did all the traditional flies, Nate. We floated. We
clobbered them.
I'll have to watch that.
Yeah.
Oh my God, dude. Yeah. And I did some newer, I did like Carolina rigs on some of them, which I swivel with a little bead above it. So I could get that down and let them stall around and just feathers are doing that. But Royal Coachman, was that number one?
Mickey Finn.
Yeah. Mickey Finn was number one.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It was stupid.
I think,
to this day, it's a top five biggest brown trout on a spey rod for me, which is not like a massive fish. I think it's maybe a hair over 20, which is great fish.
It's a great fish.
Do you remember when 20 was still huge?
I do.
Yes.
Yeah.
20 is huge.
It is huge. If people talk about it now like it's nothing.
I see that trying to like protect my own ego because there are people who are getting like 30 plus inch fish on spey rods. So I say this to protect myself.
Sure there.
Yeah, not often. There's a couple guys up in Canada who are getting a lot of big brown trout on spay rods. But I got this fish top of the column, Jacklin's hole, on a Mickey fin, just doing a swing. And I was like, it was a light bulb moment for me because I've been fishing giant stuff for so long.
We had Royal Coach from Mickey fin. I don't think we fished a black in those days. No. Fished a Royal his grandfather calls it the Montana streamer.
Montana Bucktail.
Bucktail, yeah.
Montana
Royal Coachman.
Oh, okay.
You don't get to rename the Royal Coachman, dude. You can do the rest of it. Can't rename.
Touchdown Tommy can do whatever he wants. He can do whatever he wants.
He's 90 years old.
94 years old. He can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, so he can do whatever. But it was, I am not sure I've had a more eats on a river, on this river in my life.
Oh, so many.
No kidding.
When do you think the last time somebody threw a freaking Royal Coachman?
Oh, my God. They've never seen one. Ever. Those fish have never seen one. They're not old enough.
Thin?
Credit where credit's due. How I found out about the Mickey Finn is I was up at Land of the Giants with Chris. I was getting my ass kicked. I could not buy and eat. And he got, I don't know, three, four, like for there, not huge rainbows, but big, big rainbows. I mean, 20 plus rainbows all in the Mickey Finn.
Yeah.
And I just went, okay, they're not eating a fly this big, but they're eating a yellow.
When in doubt, go small.
When in doubt, go small.
But yeah, that's what I was going to ask. So what size were these? Like sixes?
Fours.
Fours, okay.
Fours and sixes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
I don't think we have it. They're still over there. I brought all the traditionals in, and they're all still here. Other than the ones we took on that show.
Right.
That's cool.
Huh?
That's cool you did that.
Oh, my God.
No, they worked so... I mean, I remember when we had Brian Fleshing out, too. You remember he was throwing that Mickey Finn for a while.
Mm-hmm.
They were all over it, and then he hooked a... You know, brown trout that big, and one of the bigger brown trout I've seen this river tried to eat it flower, under the boat.
Yeah.
I got none of it on camera.
That's good camera.
Yeah, no.
Well, cool. That was fun.
That was
fun. Yeah, we'll do this again, Bucky. We can, I mean, so, like I said,
Blue Ribbon,
we do so many of these.
Is it blueribbon.com or anything like
Blue
that?
Ribbon Flies.
BlueRibbonFlies.com.
BlueRibbonFlies.com, West Yellowstone. Great guys, owners, everybody that works there. Super. You know, the first time I did this for one of the shop, I said something like that. He came in and says, what are you doing? What are you pulling? It's like, what do you mean?
Who said that?
I don't remember who it was. Somebody was like, thought we were sabotaging. I says, well, they're buddies of mine. What the hell's the problem?
Right, right.
It's competition. I said, oh, God.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, if you walked around West Yellowstone, there's a lot of shops.
Yeah.
You know? There's all cream rises to the top.
Yes.
So
yeah, go check out.
But a really cool shop. Really cool shop.
Yeah, you guys, like I said earlier, I've only ever had really positive experiences there, except for when I walk in and you're not working and I go, oh. But then there's somebody in there who's always friendly
always
and
nice.
Takes care of me. Yeah. Yeah. Cool shop too. Yeah, I mean, you guys carry a lot of different stuff than we do, so it's nice to go see just whatever new stuff I haven't seen in a while.
It's just fun to go. When I moved out here, before I moved out here, when I would come, I always did the shop tours.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I mean...
Go to them all.
Yeah. I just thought it was a blast. And really, I mean, you guys, I mean, BSA, Jacklin's still, it's kind of not the same owner, but the same shops. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I then remember when, what's the name was called, when MRO was across the road in the trailer.
Oh.
You know, I bought my first Patagonia in that place.
No kidding.
Yeah. And I still have it. No shit. And it was a yellow trailer, as I recall. And it was across the road. It was across the road and the floor sunk in the middle. It's like two sheets of plywood came down and you went to the back and they had a little thing. They had a four-way Patagonia and they're heavy, heavy canvas shirts. I bought a green one.
That's
and
awesome.
I still have it. I sent it back to Patagonia. I said, I'm stitch everything. I said, don't fix anything. And they did. They stitched around the collar where it was all wore through. So it's cool. So it looked, can't tell. It's okay. Thank you. Still have that sandwich. But yeah, that's how long. I don't know what year it was. In 70 sometime. It was pretty badass.
That's
but I mean, it's just fun to go to all of them.
Oh, God,
I mean,
yeah.
It seemed like when I moved here, people used to do a bigger loop. They would go and do Trout Hunter and Lawson's and you guys. And then
I loved Lawson's original shop.
That was cool as shit.
That was a great.
He's having his 50th anniversary, I think, this year. I think I saw something on Facebookers. Oh, his time flies for it. His 50th
anniversary. Oh, that's
right. Did you see how many flies he tied?
I knew he was doing it. I forgot.
Unreal. That's crazy. Are we going to shut this thing up ever?
I don't know. Whatever.
Oh, is it still?
I'm paid hourly.
Oh. Oh, God. All right. Hope you guys enjoyed it.
Thanks for having me.
See you next week. You bet.
Yeah. Thanks, Bucky.
Oh, thank you. That was great.
That was awesome.
All the other things, God.
Odd little weird end of the show. Sorry that was awkward, but it's over. See you next week.